10 a.m. to midnight at the Pegasus Project located at 518 Southeast 76th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. The Finance Committee will meet on Thursday, September 19th at 4:30 at Cider Riot at 807 Northeast Cooch Street.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 5 p.m. Coming up next is the evening news. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch, open daily until 5 p.m. More information on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, new sexual assault allegations have surfaced against Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh.
50,000 union workers at General Motors went on strike today for the first time since 2007.
And in our News in Depth segment, we speak to two attorneys from the Northwest Workers Justice Project about their advocacy work with low-wage, immigrant, and contingent workers.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, September 16th, 2019. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and we would very much like to urge you to become a member by calling us at 877-500-5266. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Ken Jones. Sexual allegations against Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh have bubbled back to the surface. Robin Pogrebin and Kate Kelly, New York Times reporters and authors of the soon-to-be-published book The Education of Brett Kavanaugh, an Investigation, detailed the allegations made by one of Kavanaugh's Yale classmates, Deborah Ramirez. During the Kavanaugh hearings, there were allegations of sexual misconduct from multiple women against Kavanaugh. However, the allegation that received the most national attention and was allegedly investigated by the FBI was one made by Dr. Christie Blasey Ford. In a New York Times article, Pogrebin and Kelly tell of the differing backgrounds of both Ramirez and Kavanaugh. They also write of Ramirez's encounter with Kavanaugh at a dorm hall party, which resulted in Kavanaugh placing his penis in front of Ramirez's face, followed by the laughter of men in the room. While this allegation is not new, both authors recount in great detail Ramirez's life leading up to the alleged assault, as well as her attempts to present evidence for the FBI's investigation of Kavanaugh during the 2018 hearings that ultimately led to Kavanaugh's lifetime confirmation as a Supreme Court judge. With the new information against Kavanaugh, many public figures, including several Democratic candidates for president, are demanding the impeachment of Kavanaugh.
On a rainy Sunday afternoon, Patriot Prayer members gathered at Portland's Pioneer Square for what the hate group's leader, Joey Gibson, called a peaceful Portland Patriot Prayer March. The group circled around the square a total of seven times and was met with counter-protesters. In comparison to previous rallies that have escalated to physical assault and traffic disruptions, this one was a relatively mild and small gathering. At one point during the rally, a man poured Pepsi into the crowd, and Portland police responded to that incident. Overall, the rally did not result in any arrests or traffic disruptions. This rally comes at a time when Joey Gibson has pled not guilty to a felony charge for a brawl outside outside of Northeast Portland Pub Cider Riot. That incident, known as May Day, resulted in Gibson pushing a woman and taunting and physically threatening other people. That's according to court documents. In video footage of the incident, Gibson was seen pushing the woman, Heather Clark, to the ground before she was knocked unconscious.
50,000 union workers went on strike today against General Motors, making it the largest strike by any union against any business since the last strike at GM in 2007. The United Auto Workers are striking to protest unfair wages and idle plants in the U.S., and the strike has halted GM's construction in the country. The union says GM puts profits ahead of employees, who helped turn the company around after it declared bankruptcy and accepted a federal bailout a decade ago. Over the past 3 years, GM has made over $35 billion, all while closing auto plants across the U.S. One problem at issue is GM's tiered wage structure, which pays workers who have been with GM since before 2007 $31 an hour. But most workers who have been hired since are paid much less, with temp workers at the bottom making around $15 per hour. Another of the union's objectives is getting GM to reopen a shuttered plant in Lordstown, Ohio. GM closed that plant and others in Baltimore and Warren, Michigan, as part of a cost-cutting effort that eliminated 2,800 jobs. GM wants employees to pay a greater portion of their health care, and the company wants to implement measures increasing workforce productivity and flexibility. In return, they offered to make $7 billion in new investments in plants in the U.S., adding around 5,000 jobs and increasing pay and benefits. Late Saturday, the UAW said, while there had been progress in the talks, there were still, quote, significant differences between the parties on wages, healthcare benefits, temporary employees, job security, and profit sharing.
This Friday, Portland middle and high school students plan to leave the classroom and take to the streets for a global climate strike. Portland student activists are aiming to raise awareness about the issue and call on city leaders to end fossil fuel burning and other forms of harmful human behaviors that impact the climate. Friday morning, students plan on leaving their classrooms and arriving at City Hall at 10:30, then reading a list of demands. After the rally, participants will walk to the East Bank. To the East Bank Esplanade for a climate strike festival. One student activist, Holly Rolfe, said, quote, "The hope is we're kind of uniting as a global movement, but also recognizing that there is a lot of work to be done locally and in small communities, and that everyone really does have a small role to play." In addition to a rally and festival, Portland student climate activists have met with Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler. At a meeting with the mayor last week, students were able to discuss the reasons for the upcoming strike.
After 38 years, Beacon PDX, a homeless service in southeast Portland, served its final meal last Wednesday. KGW reports that Beacon PDX, which served meals at Sunnyside Community House, was told it had 90 days to vacate the space. Now, an organization that served the homeless is without a home. A member of Beacon PDX, John Mayer, explained their service provided not only meals but also showers, clothing, and a safe indoors place. Mayer said, "People tell me our service is essential to them, that it's a unique place made of unique relationships. It's a place people feel at home and know that they're welcome." Currently, the organization is fundraising for a permanent space and will continue serving food through pop-up meals.
A transgender woman was attacked last night in downtown Portland. That happened near West Burnside Street. The woman attacked is Atlas Marshall, a well-known Portland drag show performer known by her stage name Nene Dominatrix. The incident occurred after one of Marshall's friends asked a group of men for a cigarette. Marshall said, quote, "He saw me, visibly could tell I was trans, I was queer, and he started throwing homophobic and transphobic slurs at me." Two men from the group pushed Marshall to the ground and beat her as one of her friends, Austin Shuchard, ran for help. Shuchard tried to intervene and was able to get one man off of Marshall, but was punched in the face. Both Shuchard and Marshall suffered injuries. Marshall has scrapes and bruises, and Shuchard suffered a broken nose and black eye. Marshall said of her injuries, quote, "I think overall the mental and emotional damage is a little bit more intense than the other stuff is for me." Currently, the incident is under investigation by Portland Police and meets bias crime conditions.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single weekday evening. So now we're asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Annette and Karen to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Well, hi there, Ken and Michelle. Ken and Michelle are our lovely afternoon anchors for the KBOO Evening News every Monday. My name is Annette Newell. I do the same thing on Thursdays from 5 to 6, and I also produce the show. And it's just a wonderful thing to be involved with because we get to cover a lot of civil rights issues that we can really go in depth on the KBOO Evening News. You heard some of the stories they were talking about. The Patriot Prayer members held a march in Portland, and Portland students joining a climate strike coming up Friday to Portland City Hall. These are stories that are important to our listeners, and they're important for the community to know about as we continue to focus on civil rights. And the theme of our drive this fall is Mic to the People, because that's exactly what KBOO is all about. And one of the people who has been instrumental here since 2011, Karen, has hosted a show called Prison Pipeline. And yes, it's a very important show on the air here.
Thank you, Annette. Yes, and we would love you to call right now, 877-500-5266. Please, we have some volunteers waiting for your call. And if you don't want to call in this evening, you can always go online at kboo.fm. We bring you the volunteer-produced news each evening, right after Democracy Now!, and we would love for you to show your support for your community-produced, volunteer-produced news hour here at KBOO. Again, the number is 877-500-5266, and again, go to your computer at kboo.fm. And Annette?
Yeah, I have a cowbell to ring. Some people don't care for the cowbell. I do. I personally love it. I ring it. Whenever we ring it, that means that we're saying, it's our way of saying thank you to somebody who has donated. And we're, right now we're thanking Edward from Vancouver. He is a sustaining member, and he did what we've been asking sustaining members to do, which is increase your monthly amount by just $1 or $2
or
if you
two.
Can afford that. And that's something that we're asking during this membership drive. If you already are a sustaining member, we certainly love and appreciate you. And if you can give us one extra dollar, gosh, that translates to about $27,000 a year.
Yes.
So that would be a huge gift for us. So,
and just two more dollars equals an additional $54,000 a year. So please, all members, please contribute. Please up your dollars. Thank you.
Yeah, and also go to kboo.fm, and you can contribute there as well. And now we're going to go back to the news.
The pricing of prescription drugs can pose a pretty big problem for low-income people and seniors who rely on medications. Oregon has combated this issue with the new Drug Price Transparency Law, which requires drug manufacturers to report specific information related to their pricing to the Department of Consumer and Business Services. In California, a new bill would deter companies from making deals to keep generic drugs off the market. Suzanne Potter has the story.
Groups that advocate for seniors are urging Governor Gavin Newsom to sign a bill that is designed to lower the cost of prescription drugs. Assembly Bill 824 would deter drug companies from making so-called pay-for-delay deals where generic companies agree to keep their product off the market. Blanca Castro with AARP California says these arrangements result in higher drug prices that can push low-income seniors to take desperate measures.
They either don't take the drugs the way they're prescribed because they want them to last, or they have to choose between buying food or buying prescription drugs.
The pharmaceutical companies claim that these agreements actually expedite entry of generics into the market, but Castro says that argument is unproven. The First in the Nation bill gives the state attorney general more resources to pursue this type of case. Castro says it makes them easier to prosecute by putting the onus on the drug companies to prove that the deals aren't unfair to the consumer.
It shifts the burden of proof on the pharmaceutical company. Right now, the attorney general must prove that the settlements are anti-competitive.
Consumer groups are working with supporters in Congress to try to ban the practice of pay-for-delay deals entirely. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Fracking is a hotly debated environmental issue. The process allows companies to extract natural gas by injecting liquid at high pressure into subterranean rocks and bore holes to force out the natural gas. The chemicals injected can contaminate drinking water supplies, among other complications. And in Ohio, a new report offers a glimpse into what secret chemicals may have been used there.
Troubling information has been uncovered about the use of so-called classified chemicals in fracking operations in Ohio. Using mapping and data analysis by Frack Tracker Alliance, new research from the Partnership for Policy Integrity shows the oil and gas industry injected potentially toxic chemicals more than 11,000 times into roughly 1,400 fracking wells between 2013 and 2018. Report author Dusty Horwick contends it's cause for concern.
EPA regulators have found that many secret chemicals have health risks, and there are multiple potential pathways of exposure, including leaks and spills, underground migration, also road spreading of these chemicals.
Ohio law allows well owners to conceal chemical formulas as trade secrets, which Silverio Caggiano with the Youngstown Fire Department says ties the hands of first responders who need to act fast in a spill or explosion.
We depend upon being able to quantify and qualify the product that we're dealing with so we know how to mitigate it. If I don't know what it is, I can't identify its physical properties and how I'm going to take care of it or how to protect people.
Under the Federal Toxic Substances Control Act, first responders can request trade secret chemical identities in emergencies in a written statement. But Gangiano argues that by the time such a request is answered and approved, it's typically too late. The industry claims trade secret provisions prevent competitors from stealing their formulas. Horwick counters there is a way for companies to protect their chemical information without keeping the public in the dark.
Drilling companies can make their chemical identities available to the public in a random list so that their competitors would not be able to reverse engineer that list of chemicals into the products that they're putting into their wells.
Caggiano says he isn't opposed to fracking, but feels the industry is being given a free pass.
Long after these companies have grabbed their money and went back to wherever they came from, the body count is going to start. Farmer Jim's going to have problems. He's going to have leukemia. His wife's going to have breast cancer. Their daughter's going to give birth to a kid that may have birth defects. And these companies are going to be long gone, and we're going to be stuck with the problems.
According to the EPA, chemicals used in fracking can cause irritation to skin and lungs and can be toxic to nerves, organs, and human development. For Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. This story was produced...
You're listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd very much like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline at 6 o'clock. At 7, it is Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Your weather forecast is more like fall than the end of summer. Tonight, you're going to get a very wet mixture of rain and thunder showers and a low of 56. Tomorrow, another rainy day with a high of 63 and a low of 56. Today in history, famous American jazz lyricist and singer John Hendricks was born. And our quote of the day is from Mr. Hendricks, who said, "Jazz is an art form that depends on its antecedents. There must be respect for the people who have gone before."
A new study has found a racial gap in crucial stroke treatments. Fewer Black and Hispanic patients receive new treatments than white patients do. Diane Bernard has more on the story.
Black and Hispanic people having a stroke are less likely than their white counterparts to get critical treatment, according to new research from the American Heart Association's journal Stroke. The study shows that one reason is that minority stroke patients don't get to the hospital fast enough, says Dr. Jason Freeman, the association's Virginia ambassador.
Lack of trust in medical care, belief that symptoms are going to get better, concern about cost, lack of health insurance. There are many reasons why people end up presenting later to the emergency room.
Dr. Freeman, a physician of color, says that although doctors always need to work on unconscious biases, personal prejudice was highly unlikely in the study's finding of racial disparities. The research took place from 2016 to 2018 and found that 7% of Black or Hispanic stroke patients received a relatively new treatment called mechanical thrombectomy, compared with 10% of white patients. Freeman says this therapy removes clots that block large blood vessels and needs to start within 6 hours of the onset of a stroke.
When you talk to people in the community, they often are not aware that there are any particular treatment options, because what they see are friends and family members who have had a stroke and had a poor outcome related to that stroke.
The report shows that the medical community needs to do a better job educating the public about newer treatments available to stroke patients to prevent death and improve quality of life, Freeman says. For Public News Service, I'm Diane Bernard reporting.
You are listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. You know, our volunteers work many hard hours every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news. So now it is your turn to support that effort. Joining us now are Annette and Karen to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Yes, it is your turn, and we're here in Pledge Central asking you to call 877-500-5266. You're just listening to the volunteer-produced evening news here at KBOO, brought to you every weekday, and Annette and I are here to urge you to either call or go to your website. Go to the website, kboo.fm, and click on... join now and make your pledge.
And why should you do that? Well, listen to some of the stories that you just heard on the KBOO Evening News. You heard about fracking. Chemicals from fracking can cause health risks, and there's a fight to get a disclosure of those health risks from the companies that do it. There's a racial gap in stroke treatments. Civil rights proponents are pushing for that to change. Low-income seniors fighting for more affordable prescription drugs. That's going on, too. All of these stories, they kind of have a similar theme, and you can affect change in our community through the reporting you hear on the KBOO Evening News. So call right now to help support the KBOO Evening News. Call 877-500-5266.
And again, go to your website, kboo.fm. We'd love to hear from you. And renewing members, if you can contribute at least one more dollar or two more dollars, we can actually shorten this membership drive because one more dollar, increasing your membership by just one more dollar can increase... can bring in $27,000, and increasing by two more dollars can increase the funding by $54,000, and that would be a great help to keep the evening news and other public affairs, music, everything that we bring to you over the airwaves of KBOO coming to your radio station.
That's right. That's coming to the airwaves of Portland, and that's what makes the KBOO Evening News special every weekday from 5 o'clock on, 5 to 6. We have local programming that is produced by local volunteers and in-depth reporting. You might have said to your friends, I was listening to KBOO and I heard this story. Well, that's what KBOO is about. It's about giving a mic to the people. It's about the essential information you need to know every day, and how you can affect change, and getting your news from different perspectives that you might not hear anywhere else. Again, the number to call is 877-500-5266. And you have a Prison Pipeline show coming up.
We do have a Prison Pipeline show coming up, and we have a one-hour special tonight. And with me will be Babak Zolbagari-Azar, and we're going to be talking about Measure 11, Oregon's mandatory minimum sentencing law, the One Strike, You're Out law. And there has been new legislation passed in the 2019 Oregon legislative session that affects youth as young as 15, 16, and 17-year-olds. So we will be talking about that at 6 o'clock tonight.
And back to you, Ken and Michelle.
Oh, thanks, Annette and Karen. Research labs use a lot of energy and materials. One researcher is working to change that. Dr. Anthony Lazowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When Allison Paradise started working at a research lab in high school, she was dismayed to find that there was nowhere to recycle disposable lab equipment. In college and grad school, she found the same thing.
I finally just said, you know what, something has to be done about this, and I'm going to just do it.
So Paradise started a nonprofit called My Green Lab. It works with labs at universities and biotech companies to help them reduce not only waste, but their water and energy use, which is typically very high. Labs often consume more than 3 times as much energy per square foot as office buildings. She says some labs can save energy by replacing old equipment. For example, older models of ultra-cold lab freezers often use as much electricity as an entire house. But now, there are more energy-efficient models available. Paradise says people also must change their habits.
Equipment is left on 24/7, even though it doesn't have to be. I never questioned it when I worked in the lab. Most people we talk to never think about that, and that's just a habit we have to break.
She says her goal is to help labs grow a culture of sustainability so that cutting-edge science does not come at the expense of the planet. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
And the climate news continues with a Montana town that has made itself a blueprint of how rural America can adapt to and combat the changing climate. Eric Tegetoff reports that even in more conservative areas, rural communities are figuring out a way to be part of the climate change conversation.
Whitefish has become a model for how rural towns can adapt to the effects of climate change. The jumpstart for the northwestern Montana town was the Resilience Dialogues in 2017, which partly led the city to produce its Climate Action Plan in 2018. Steve Thompson was project manager for the plan and says the dialogues helped local leaders outline the issues with help from experts around the globe. He says it also provided a valuable lesson about how to talk about this issue in rural, more conservative communities.
There's a lot of people that are interested in being part of the solution. They're not interested in just having big picture discussions about climate change, but they're willing to talk about climate change, and they're not denying climate change if the frame is what we can do locally to be part of the solution.
A report out today from the American Association for the Advancement of Sciences highlights the Flathead Valley town's climate action work and the role resilience dialogues played. Thompson says the Whitefish Climate Action Plan is a roadmap to resilience. By 2025, the town aims to reduce emissions by 26% below 2016 levels through a solar farm, energy-efficient buildings, transitioning to electric vehicles, and other initiatives. Whitefish also is putting measures in place to protect the town against its greatest threat, wildfires, through fire safety councils and collaboration with regional landowners. Rachel Jacobson is with the American Society of Adaptation Professionals, which helped facilitate the resilience dialogues. She says one key to the program is connecting communities that face the same risks.
Although each community is special, each community is unique, helping people to understand that for every challenge you're facing with respect to climate change, there is most likely someone out there who's experienced something similar and that you can learn from.
Thompson says he sees amazing climate action going on in big cities and thinks rural communities should figure out their own way to be part of the climate change conversation, too.
Rural America is actually being impacted probably more dramatically just because this is where the land is. This is where the water is. And we need to be at the table, but we need to be smart about how we engage rural America.
For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegetoff.
On Sunday night, Purdue Pharma, the makers of the infamous drug OxyContin, filed for bankruptcy. The decision, which was made to protect the business's funds, comes under scrutiny as the business and the owners of Purdue Pharma are facing 2,600 federal and state lawsuits. The drug has long been linked to the ongoing and destructive opioid health epidemic, leading many to lives of addiction, financial ruin, overdoses, as well as high rates of children entering the foster care system. The bankruptcy decision was also made to equip the company for settlement agreements. However, as the New York Times reports, several states, including Massachusetts and New York, have refused to settle with Purdue Pharma. Steve Miller, the chairman of Purdue's board of directors, said in a statement, "This settlement framework avoids wasting hundreds of millions of dollars and years on protracted litigation and instead will provide billions of dollars and critical resources to communities across the country trying to cope with the opioid crisis."
Now is your chance to show your support for the work our volunteers put into bringing you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year, and we sure do need you. Joining us right now from PM News is Annette and Karen from Prison Pipeline to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
All right. Thank you, Michelle and Ken. My name is Annette Newell, and I actually am a producer for the KBOO Evening News for Thursdays, and I produce and anchor the show. Ken and Michelle, I've often worked with you, and you do a great job. We're all here basically because we love KBOO and we care about KBOO. And you heard some of the stories, like about how Purdue Pharmaceuticals declaring bankruptcy because of the opioid epidemic and the many lawsuits. And we've had stories on the KBOO Evening News about how, for example, the Oregon and Washington attorney generals have recently said that they will not agree to a settlement. And now Purdue Pharma is saying that they will no longer, that they're going to declare bankruptcy because they can no longer afford to pay out all of the, basically, the horrible health effects that have happened because of the opioid epidemic all across the country, and also how rural communities are adapting to climate change. You heard that on the KBOO Evening News tonight. Being informed helps you navigate the world better. It helps you understand what issues affect your community. And most important of all, we're giving a mic to the people through the KBOO Evening News, and that's why I find it so important. And so that's why we're asking you to just please pick up the phone and call 877-500-5266 and make your donation. We're asking, if you're already a recurring donor, we definitely love and appreciate you, and we're asking if you haven't done it before, please become a member and join this wonderful community. And Karen, you have a show coming up tonight. You have a guest coming on.
Yes, we have Prison Pipeline will have a whole special hour tonight. We're usually on at 6:30. We'll be on at 6, from 6 to 7 tonight. And my special guest is Babak Zolbagari Azar. And he is with Portland OIC, and he works with youth. And he will be talking about Measure 11 and how it affects our youth, how it affects the devastating effects it has on our youth and their families and our communities. And we'll be talking about changes were made in the Oregon legislature this past year pertaining to youth. And so we would love for you to call right now, 877-500-5266. Show your support for Ken, Michelle, and all the other news reporters here at KBOO. They bring you the evening news. They do such a wonderful job. We would love for you to take a stand for truth, take a stand for freedom, take a stand for facts. You are part of this powerful movement of participatory independent media, and we call on you to show your support for KBOO's evening news. 877-500-5266.
And now more than ever, your investment in the KBOO Evening News ensures some fearless reporting, thoughtful questions, relevant local information. Again, power mic to the people and power to the people. Call 877-500-5266. Now back to Ken and Michelle.
Construction of the Trump border wall will require a lot of water, and precious groundwater is being used to supply it. A lawsuit has been filed to prevent the use of this resource by federal contractors on the project. With this story and more, it's The Week in Water.
Trump's border wall is sucking up desert water. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Water is needed to construct the border wall with Mexico being built by the Trump administration, and the contractor is getting it from underground.
The 30-foot-high border wall will cross through the southern edge of the Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument in Arizona's Sonoran Desert. The Arizona Republic reports that Customs and Border Protection and its contractor are pumping water from existing wells in the monument and have not ruled out drilling new ones.
Nearly 2 million gallons will be used for every mile of fence. Environmentalists fear that the pumping threatens a spring that is the only source of surface water that serves as an oasis for wildlife over hundreds of miles.
Construction of the wall would usually require environmental impact statements, but the Department of Homeland Security waived more than 30 environmental and public health laws to expedite construction. A pending lawsuit challenges whether the administration can bypass those statutes. offshoots.
Oregon Pipe is a UNESCO-recognized international biosphere reserve meant for testing and studying ecological systems. The National Park Service describes the monument as celebrating the life and landscape of the Sonoran Desert in an almost pristine setting.
Last Thursday, the Trump administration rescinded a rule that was intended to protect drinking water and the environment.
The issue is simple. Which bodies of water should be protected under the Clean Water Act?
In 2015, the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers under President Obama had enacted a regulation expanding what the government should protect, but Trump ordered agencies to revise it soon after he was inaugurated.
Conservatives have viewed the Obama rule as being a power grab by the federal government that hurt farmers, businesses, and property owners. The American Farm Bureau, among others, sued over the old rule.
The New York Times reports that the government is expected to issue a new rule by the end of this year that strips away protections for wetlands that are not adjacent to major bodies of water and for streams that only run during or after rainfalls.
Various organizations expressed outrage at the action. The advocacy group Environment America said that it turns the mission of the EPA on its head and tells the agency to stop protecting waters from polluters.
Audubon said that the decision scraps science-based efforts to protect wetlands, threatening millions of acres of bird habitat. And a former director of science and technology at the EPA told Earther that the victors in the rollback are land developers, miners, and the oil and gas industry.
Also last week, the Trump administration said that it will seek to open the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska to oil and gas exploration.
The refuge, which lies in the far northeast of Alaska on the Beaufort Sea, is home to wolves, polar bears, caribou, and migratory birds.
Earther reports that the administration hopes to sell oil and gas leases before year-end, but the actual extraction may not occur for some 10 years.
In the meantime, exploration for fossil fuels will bring roads, seismic testing, and disruptions to the fragile ecosystem.
Environmental groups severely criticized opening the area. The president of Defenders of Wildlife said the action is categorically illegal and an existential threat to polar bears. He added that 70% of Americans oppose opening the refuge.
Democrats in the House of Representatives voted Thursday to reverse the law allowing the lease sales, but it has no chance of being considered in the Republican-controlled Senate.
The Metropolitan Water District of Southern California serves about 19 million people. It imports about 60% of its water.
Finding alternative sources is critical due to a warming climate and the energy costs of transporting that water.
That's why last week the agency approved $5 million for a stormwater pilot project to determine the best and most efficient way to capture the huge amount of rainwater that flows off roofs and pavement each year.
The Pasadena Star News reports that in the city of Los Angeles, more than 160 billion gallons empty off the coast. Not only is that a waste of water, but the runoff carries harmful chemicals and bacteria that pollute beaches and the ocean.
The new pilot project will use cisterns and permeable pavement with underground collection systems. LA has set a goal to source 70% of its water locally by 2035.
And finally, if you plan to fly Alaska Airlines anytime soon, it's BYOB. But the carrier is not asking you to bring your own beer or saying that they're eliminating the beverage cart. They want you to bring your own refillable, reusable water bottle as a part of its new sustainability campaign.
The airline's Fill Before You Fly initiative encourages passengers to bring their own water bottle and fill it before they board. The goal is to reduce the amount of in-flight waste going to landfills by 70% by 2020, according to Business Traveler magazine.
In addition, the airline is partnering with the Bonneville Environmental Foundation to plant a tree for every passenger who brings a pre-filled water bottle on an Alaska flight and posts it to social media with the hashtag Fill Before You Fly.
The foundation's goal is to plant 1 million trees on the West Coast to help reduce pollution and restore habitat for local fish and wildlife.
Around the world, almost 1 million plastic bottles are purchased every minute, according to Reuters. Most of those are used once and end up in our waterways, on our beaches, and in the oceans, with devastating effects on ecosystems.
The airline says that if just 10% of all its passengers brought their own bottle, the carrier would save 4 million plastic cups and over 700,000 plastic water bottles.
And the bonus? You can ignore the cart as it goes down the aisle and take a nap instead. This Week in Water is supported by the American Water Works Association. Discuss solutions for protecting and managing aging infrastructure at WIC19. Learn more at awwa.org/water infrastructure.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel is said to unveil a major set of measures to cut the country's emissions. The measures will be unveiled on Friday and will outline a plan to cut greenhouse gas emissions by 55% in 2030. That's compared to Germany's 1990 levels. The ruling coalition has reached an agreement on climate packages, which would reportedly cost at least 40 billion euros or 44.6 billion U.S. dollars until 2023. Merkel described the dilemmas of the policy and its potential impact on the economy in her weekly podcast. Merkel said, quote, "On the one hand, we want climate protection measures to be effective to meet our commitments. On the other hand, we want to be economically sensible and act in a socially acceptable way so that all people can afford climate protection." The plan is expected to include grants for electric car buyers, expand charging stations for electric vehicles, raise road taxes on polluting vehicles, improve heating systems in buildings, and raise a green surcharge for plane tickets. As of now, Germany is set to miss its own emission goals for 2020. That has ignited frequent protests, especially from young people demanding faster action on climate change.
You're listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. You can call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Janai Boyer. The producer is Claire Rosciato. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. Our evening news director is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
I'm Michelle Coppola, and I want to remind you, KBOO does not fill up your newscast with ads, but we do need your support to keep this local newscast coming to your airwaves and web stream. Joining us right now are Annette and Karen to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thank you again, Ken and Michelle. And we urge you, we invite you to take a moment and show your support for the evening news here at KBOO. The number again is 877-500-5266. We have wonderful volunteers standing by to take your call, to chat with you, to receive your pledge, your donation, and to hear what you love about KBOO. And they're waiting for the phones to ring. Please make the phones ring, 877-500-5266. Show your support for your volunteer-produced community radio station.
And you can also go online to kboo.fm and become a member right now today. You can do this. We can take your donation. If it's $5, if it's $10, if it's $20, we invite you to become a member of KBOO. And whatever you can afford, we appreciate every dollar. And if you're already a sustaining member, a giving member, thank you so very much. We love you. And we invite you to also add one more dollar if you're a sustaining member. If you increase your monthly donation by just $1 or $2 more, if all of our monthly donors did that, that would be an extra $27,000 a year for the station. And that's a lot of money for this community radio station. And KBOO is special. This is not public radio, and it's not commercial radio. It's community radio. It's community for the listeners. It's mic to the people is our theme, and I think that's really an appropriate theme because, you know, now more than ever, your investment in KBOO means that you get fearless reporting, thoughtful questions, relevant local investigations. Just a small expense can be a big part of your day. Think about KBOO's place in your day, how it enriches and informs you regularly. We have the KBOO Evening News every night at 5 o'clock. And the money you invest now comes back to you as a service that's really essential in the community. You hear diverse viewpoints that you wouldn't hear in other places. And you can only step outside of this new norm because of your support. Maybe you won't be near a radio later today. It might slip your mind. Well, you can still take care of your contribution while you're thinking about it. You can go to kboo.fm. Also call 877-500-5266.
And maybe you've been listening to KBOO for a while, and maybe you aren't a member yet. And you heard us asking for support, but you thought we were talking to somebody else, not to you. Well, we're talking to you right now. Now's the time to call or donate online. Again, that number is 877-500-5266. Or come on down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, right across the Burnside Bridge. We'd love to meet you. We'd love to show you the whole setup here at KBOO. Please call. Thank you.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
The Northwest Workers' Justice Project provides high-quality legal support and education to workers and their organizations with a focus on low-wage workers' organizing rights and the rights of immigrant and contingent workers, as well as the effects of international trade on low-wage workers. To tell us more, we are very fortunate to have Danya Mudabagil and Kate Suzman. Did I pronounce that correctly? Okay, great. They are here with us from the Northwest Workers Justice Project. Kate is an attorney with the organization. Danya is a paralegal with the organization. Thank you so much for being here, Danya and Kate. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. So first of all, give us a little overview of exactly what NWJP does.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, our general mission is to represent clients and advocate for workers' rights. And our work kind of gets broken down into litigation, representing our clients in their employment cases, community outreach and worker education, and then policy advocacy and coalition work to strengthen worker protections in the law.
So most people, of course, are familiar with an immigrant worker and what that entails and what that means. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what a contingent worker is?
Sure. When we say contingent worker, we mean someone who's not a regular full-time worker. So you might think of someone in the gig economy, a freelancer, maybe a day laborer or a contractor. So these are folks who generally don't enjoy all the benefits of what a full-time worker would and what many of us think of as a job.
Wow. Okay. So there's a ton of people who fall under that umbrella. That's incredible. In fact, I personally fall under that umbrella as an independent contractor. I had no idea. So tell me what special issues, let's go back to the immigrant workers. What special issues do immigrant workers face?
Yeah. So, alongside, issues of wage theft, not being paid, what workers are owed, retaliation, what we see with immigrant workers a lot is discrimination. So racism, immigrant status, language spoken, country of origin, all these things can be used against immigrant workers. And this is made worse when employers use this information, knowing that an immigrant is an immigrant or does not have status, against that worker and treating them even worse because they know or they think that the worker won't stand up for their rights out of fear.
They feel like they could take advantage of them because they don't know the system.
Right.
And I would imagine that when it comes to immigrant workers and contingent workers, that immigrant workers as opposed to contingent workers, you have a lot more racial issues and a lot more racial disparity. What are the differences in the issues that they face?
Yeah, I could speak to that somewhat. We know that workplaces overall are getting safer in the U.S., which is a good thing.
Yay!
But we also know that immigrant workers are being hurt and sometimes killed at higher rates in the last decade or so. So we think that's because these workers who are sometimes immigrants, maybe they're working as temp workers or contingent workers, that broader category, we think they're often assigned more dangerous jobs and they get less training to do those jobs.
Oh, wow.
So that's one issue, one distinction. We also see issues around instability with paychecks. You know, that's something I think most people can relate to. If you don't know how long you're going to work at a place, and maybe you don't have an agreement or an employment contract, we see a lot of housing instability with our clients, who we represent anyone who's a low-wage worker, but we see many, many Spanish-speaking immigrants, partly because we're known in that community sure. for 15 years or so as folks who were there.
Wow. So tell me, what sort of worker education do you offer? What is the goal of the programs that you offer?
We offer different types of worker education. We're generally know your workplace rights, and this kind of, you know, runs the gamut. And this is just so that workers can identify these violations themselves, and they can stand up and defend themselves if they want to. Also helps them know that they're not alone in this. These problems that they face, others face them as well, and that people like us have their backs, and that there are ways to stand up for themselves and, you know, have support in that. So that's kind of a general type of training that we do to different communities. And then we also do more specific training, like around health and safety. You know, what are your rights around reporting and complaining about injuries? And then just technical safety trainings on things such as pesticides or ergonomics.
So I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball here. I know that you advocate and work with the workers themselves. Do any of your policies or programs involve educating or working with employers to help them do a better job? Or do they fall under the nemesis category?
I don't think we'd say nemesis, but we don't do any advocacy or education for employers. There are other resources for those folks,
there are.
But
okay.
We really, we think we serve a very needed niche where we represent and advocate for and educate Spanish-speaking employees and any low-wage workers.
Okay. So your organization has been working closely with the ACLU to address ICE enforcement at courthouses. What's been happening there, and what has been done to address it?
Yeah, it's pretty exciting work. We're working with ACLU, and it's kind of a coalition of different community groups, faith leaders, immigrant right activists, coming together because we know it's in the interest of every Oregonian to encourage court appearances of all Oregonian residents. And this ICE activity is having a terrible effect on access to justice. Despite requests from top Oregon officials, ICE still is doing this in courthouses. This activity continues. So there's kind of like three main goals that this breaks down into, and one of them, increasing public awareness on the harms of ICE activity in the courthouse, what people don't know about what effect this can have, amplifying the work of coalition organizing, how we can all come together around this issue, and then pressuring Chief Justice Martha Walters to issue emergency rules, because she has the power and authority to do that, to protect the administration of justice, the individual rights to access justice, and to maintain decorum in courthouses across Oregon.
That's really great work. You know, as somebody who works full-time as an independent contractor, I'm familiar with some of the issues involving contingency work. I had no idea I was a contingency worker or a contingent worker before, but a lot of people who work regular full-time jobs with benefits and so forth might not be familiar with the issues that somebody who is a contingent worker or an immigrant worker faces. Can you speak to that a little bit and tell us, you know, how it differs and what they might not be aware of?
Yeah. I think we mentioned before that there's obviously a lack of stability for those type of workers. You also don't have some basic protections that regular employees do, like the right to unionize, for example, which we think is a really important right and one that we work hard to make sure workers have. Also protections like workers' comp insurance, if you are one of those workers who's hurt at work. And a lot of the gig economy workers specifically don't have that benefit, though California just passed a great law that will bring them under these employee protections. Unemployment insurance, when you lose your job, if you're laid off as a contractor or a contingent worker.
You don't have access to unemployment insurance, that's right.
Yeah, you often don't. And basic things like health insurance.
So you guys focus a lot on the international trade issues and the effects on low-wage workers. Of course, we have Trump starting the tariff issues and so forth. How is that affecting the people who work in this economy, the gig economy, contingent workers and immigrant workers? How do the Trump tariffs affect it? How do international trade issues affect them differently than a regular full-time worker?
You know, we do a lot of work around visa workers, workers who are brought over here because employers say they can't find enough U.S. workers to take certain jobs. Those workers, the visa workers, are often some of the most exploitable and exploited. So we do a lot of work to make sure that those folks have connections to some of the resources like what we provide and what other community organizations provide, and to make sure that those abuses that that can happen aren't happening with those workers. Neither of us work so much on the trade issue, so I can't speak to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So two really important questions here. First of all, how does someone who needs your help, who is a contingent worker or an immigrant worker, they hear about you, how do they get in touch with you to get assistance? And then the second part of that question is, how do people help you who know about these issues and want to support the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. Yeah, I can speak to that. If you have an issue that you want to talk to us about, if you just want to get more information, you can give us a call. And, you know, our intakes are, it's a free process. And, you know, you can just contact us with any of those questions and we can try our best to help you out. And then if you want to know more about the work that we do, you can visit our website. There's lots of information on what we do and then also how to donate. All the work that we do is funded by your donations. So our representation work and our advocacy work is all dependent on this. And we try our best to take cases that other law firms might not take traditionally because they're more uphill. And this funding helps us do that.
Or there's not a whole lot of money in it for them. Let's just be honest, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So what is your website? Where can people get more information? Do you have social media and so forth?
We do. We have our Facebook page, Northwest Workers Justice Project. And then our website, www.nwjp.org. And yeah, we're always looking for volunteers. You can reach out to us if you're looking to be a volunteer attorney, law clerk, paralegal. And then actually, if you want to find out more information on how to support our efforts on the ICE activity in the courthouses, you can find out more information on our Facebook page.
Wonderful. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Danya, so much for being here and for the work that you do.
Thank you.
We really do appreciate it. Coming up next is Prison Pipeline. But first, we need to go to Annette and to Karen to talk about supporting people-powered community radio. We're giving a mic to the people just like we just did with NWJP. We are the only 100% volunteer-hosted station in Oregon. Take it away, ladies.
Well, actually, it's going to be a lady and a gent this time around. my name's Annette Newell, and I am here with Mike Fitaklis, who is basically, I'm going to brag on Mike a little bit. He's wonderful at running the board. He runs a little bit of everything, I think, around here. But, you know, you're just an example of the wonderful people who both work for and volunteer for the radio station here, and it's something that we care about so much, and we want people to become members here. Please call this number, 877-500-5266, and we invite you to become part of KBOO and become part of the KBOO Evening News and of the many, many shows, Prison Pipeline show that's coming up right after this one. All these are member-supported shows. This is member-supported community radio.
Yeah, absolutely, Annette. This is the first day of KBOO's fall membership drive. We come to you a few times a year, and we ask you to call 877-500-5266. We ask you to go to kboo.fm/give. We ask you to tap on the donate button in your app on your phone or on your portable device. We ask you to support KBOO, because KBOO makes a difference in the lives of the people in your community. There are workers who heard this interview with Kate and Danya tonight who are now going to be able to get the resources that they need to get justice in their employment situation. This is giving real opportunities to people that would not otherwise have them without this opportunity. So please make that call right now, 877-500-5266. Show us why KBOO is so important to you and to your community.
Right. And KBOO News, we usually have to have a section at the end of the show. Usually it airs around 5:40 to 6 o'clock every night. We call that KBOO News In Depth. And basically, we take a deep dive into an issue, and it's usually related to social justice and stuff that's going on right here in our community. Again, you heard about the rights of immigrants workers in that interview and how low-wage workers often suffer from instability with paychecks, and sometimes employers are, frankly, abuse them. And in those unfortunate cases, there are groups like the Northwest Workers Justice Project that can help solve these problems, very important problems in our community. Remember, being informed helps you navigate the world around you better. You can affect change right here in our community through the reporting you hear on the KBOO Evening News. Call us at 877-500-5266. We'd like to hear more of those phones ringing. We appreciate all the people who have donated. And Mike, I think you have a donation to talk about there.
We do. We'd like to thank Satya, a new member from Damascus, who called in and joined the KBOO family. You can join too, kboo.fm/give, tap the donate button in your app, or give us a call, 877-500-5266. We're about to hear Prison Pipeline here on KBOO. This is a show that's syndicated around the Pacifica network. When you are incarcerated and you know, whether you know it or not, you know someone who has a friend or family member who is incarcerated, the radio is your lifeline because you don't have regular access to the internet, you don't have, you know, podcasts. The radio terrestrial broadcast is your lifeline. So for all the people on the inside, we hear you and we are with you. And that is what shows like Prison Pipeline are all about right here on KBOO Portland. Give us a call right now. Show your support for people who are on the inside. Dedicate your donation to a family member who has served time or who is currently serving time. 877-500-5266. Go to kboo.fm on your computer or tap the donate button from your KBOO app on your phone.
And now we're going to go to Prison Pipeline. But one more time, let's get that phone number in for you in case you were trying to jot it down. It's 877-500-5266. We'd like to hear from you right now. Also go online to kboo.fm and become a member right now.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Brunchbox, with two locations on the west side in downtown Portland at 620 Southwest 9th Avenue, and on the east side at 676 Southeast Morrison Street. Brunchbox serves up a menu full of burgers and sandwiches every day from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Lunch was provided by Laughing Planet, with locations throughout Portland as well as Vancouver, Eugene, Bend, and Corvallis. Laughing Planet is a quick service cafe featuring bowls, burritos, salads, and soups made from locally sourced ingredients. Dinner was provided by Dove Vivi, located at 2727 Northeast Gleason Street in Portland. Open every day from 4 to 10 p.m. Dove Vivi serves handmade cornmeal crust pizza. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm/give right now.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now.